It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it admittedly is a bit gray out. They have a light rain falling, 38 degrees at the airport, and also southeast winds at 8 miles per hour. 8 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for a 30% chance of showers trickling off this afternoon. Mostly cloudy skies, high near 39, south winds to 15, gusting to 20. Partly cloudy overnight, low of 28, southwest winds to 5. And for tomorrow, look for some precipitation. Chance of rain and snow will turn into just plain rain. That rain could be heavy at times when it does come in. Southeast winds gusting to 25 tomorrow afternoon, could gust as high as 30. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska lawmakers are considering at least three bills that would increase the state's renewable energy capacity. And the Ketchikan Public Library is again talking about books and banning. Those stories plus more coming up after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Is democracy still this country's sacred cause? That is the question President Biden put before American voters who may once again end up deciding this November between him and former President Donald Trump should Trump secure the GOP presidential nomination. The timing of Biden's first campaign speech of the election year this afternoon is notable. It was made a day before the third anniversary of the pro-Trump insurrection at the U.S. Capitol.
The whole world watched in disbelief, and Trump did nothing. Members of his staff, members of his family, Republican leaders who were under attack at that very moment, pled with him, act, call off the mob. Imagine had he gone out and said, stop. And still, Trump did nothing. Was among the worst derelictions of duty by a president in American history.
Contrary to what multiple courts and elections officials say, Trump maintains that he was cheated out of re-election in 2020, and his supporters remain loyal despite multiple civil and criminal cases Trump faces over his role January 6th, his business dealings, his handling of classified documents, and sexual assault allegations. Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco says the Justice Department is doubling down on its plans to attack violent crime. So far, local and federal efforts appear to be paying off in a number of major cities. For example, the number of homicides in Baltimore and Detroit fell last year. We have more from NPR's Carrie Johnson.
Violent crime has declined in many places since the height of the pandemic, and the Justice Department says it wants to maintain that momentum. The agency says enhanced background checks for young people buying guns have kept 527 weapons out of the hands of people who should not have them. The Marshals Service has arrested more than 6,000 violent fugitives over the last year and a half. But Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco says too many communities still suffer because of gun violence. She says the federal government will continue to work with state and local law enforcement to reduce those crimes. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
The UN's Children's Fund says more than 1 million children in Gaza are in danger from intensifying conflict, malnutrition, and disease. Here's NPR's Lauren Frayer.
UNICEF says cases of diarrhea in children under 5 in Gaza jumped 50% in a week, and that 90% of infants and toddlers under the age of 2 there are now victims of what it calls severe food poverty. Israel initially blocked food and fuel deliveries to Gaza after Hamas kidnapped and killed Israelis on October 7th. Since then, Israel has partially lifted its blockade, but aid agencies say not nearly enough supplies are getting through.
That's Lauren Frayer. It's NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Alaska lawmakers will be considering clean energy projects as the 33rd Alaska Legislature starts its regular session in Juneau this month. As Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports, legislators in both State House and Senate are looking to expand Alaska's renewable energy potential.
Alaska lawmakers are eyeing renewable energy expansion for many reasons. Progressives highlight the need to scale back fossil fuel emissions, which drive climate change. Moderates and conservatives also point toward the economic benefits of moving away from costly fossil fuels like diesel, especially in rural areas. So far, there are at least three bills to watch this session that are aimed at growing Alaska's renewable energy production. Let's start with SB 152, the Community Solar Bill. It would allow neighbors to group together to put up small-scale renewable energy projects, a small solar farm, even a wind or hydro project.
The idea is really to provide more options for people across Alaska, more energy options.
Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, is the bill's sponsor. This kind of small renewable project is done in conjunction with a local utility company. The community members who invested in the project get to use the electricity it generates, and any extra electricity gets sold back to the utility.
If you're in like a condo association and you want to put several solar panels on some roofs and provide that energy for a number of different people in the association, you can't do it under the current regulations and current laws. So this would allow that sort of activity to occur.
Willikowski says the idea to provide regulations for community renewable energy projects gained steam early in the last legislative session. He introduced a bill last spring and thinks there will be a lot of support for it this session. The second bill, that's SB 125, proposed by Governor Mike Dunleavy, it would establish what's called a green bank under the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. This green bank, known as the Alaska Energy Independence Fund, would provide loans to families and rural utilities to help finance sustainable energy projects, including power generation and storage, as well as efficiency improvements. Nonpartisan Anchorage Representative Calvin Trogge spoke about the benefits of a green bank at a recent event hosted by Alaska Common Ground. He says a state-backed program will help attract outside investment and give renewable energy projects momentum.
It allows us to say, we're going to package these, we're going to help subsidize in some ways, make them slightly more profitable than maybe some of the other traditional investments you might be looking at, and it allows us to attract that outside money, and again, some inside from our local institutions, but it allows us to attract that money and steer it towards renewable energy projects.
Trogge also notes that the federal government has set aside tens of billions of dollars to fund green banks nationwide under the Inflation Reduction Act. SB 125 and its companion bill in the House are both waiting in finance committees and expected to advance this session. And last but not least, State Senator Lukey Tobin, an Anchorage Democrat, and Representative Jesse Sumner, a Wasilla Republican, are pushing a renewable portfolio standard, also known as an RPS, for Railbelt utilities. The RPS bill sets benchmarks for how much of a utility's power generation should come from renewable sources. In this case, the bill would set a standard saying 25% of Railbelt power should be generated by renewable methods by 2027, which Tobin calls very achievable, and it aims for 80% renewables by 2040. Railbelt utilities are facing an impending natural gas shortfall, which could result in dramatic increases to residents' electricity bills. Clean energy advocates say high standards like those in the RPS proposal could save consumers billions of dollars in fuel costs in coming decades. RPS bills in the House and Senate are also awaiting consideration by committees. The legislature is set to gavel in on January 16th. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
Another bill before the Alaska legislature aims to help working families move off of food stamps by allowing their incomes to rise while benefiting from the program. Alaska is currently one of seven states that require food stamp recipients to remain below an income cap. KUAC's Robin reports.
House Bill 196 adds one sentence to Alaska's SNAP statute. That's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The food stamp bill is co-sponsored by Fairbanks Representative Maxine Dybert.
It helps working families by eliminating a benefits cliff as their earnings rise.
That benefits cliff is an earnings cap the legislation would increase.
And it just allows one to ramp up so that you can get a better job with some supports.
Currently, Alaska SNAP's gross income limit is 130% of Alaska's poverty level. That's about $4,000 per month for a family of four. That means if a SNAP recipient earns a couple more dollars in their paycheck, they could lose their benefits, potentially more than they gain. The bill would also raise the gross income eligibility for SNAP from 130% to 200% of poverty level. For Hannah Hill, who directs the Breadline in Fairbanks, the change would remove one of several problems with the state's food stamp system.
This last backlog, we saw 12,000 Alaskans not able to access SNAP, and that's coming out of an administrative issue at the state level. And they're working through some real difficulties. There's not enough staff. There's not enough funding. They're using a phenomenally outdated computer system. So they have some real challenges that will take, ultimately, actual money to address. But in the meantime, the people that are being harmed by that are the folks who are already most vulnerable in our communities.
The legislation would also eliminate something called the asset test. A family of four can't have money in the bank exceeding about $2,000. Dybert says that penalizes savings.
People want to save, so you save, put money into your savings. You can't, so that's disheartening for anyone. I mean, don't we all want a savings account?
The law also restricts SNAP recipients to one vehicle, a stipulation Dybert says can inhibit subsistence fishing and hunting.
If you have a four-wheeler or a boat to do your hunting and traveling, those are assets. You make too much.
41 other states have enacted legislation improving broad-based categorical eligibility. Hill says advocates across the state, like Food Bank of Alaska and the Alaska Food Coalition, are pushing the bill.
Because it's a no-cost measure to remove some of the administrative burden for this process. So it's like, you don't get much more win-win than this.
House Bill 196 is sponsored by Democratic Representative Genevieve Mina of Anchorage. There's a Senate companion, SB 149, sponsored by Republican Senator Kathy Giesel of Anchorage. Giesel and Mina wrote together about the bill last fall, saying it aligns with the governor's Family First initiative by reducing hunger for Alaska's families and seniors. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The Ketchikan Public Library will again see challenges over whether several books should remain on its shelves in 2024 after a year of controversy surrounding book bans last year. As KRBD's Jack Darrell reports, the Library Advisory Board will take up the issue next week.
Library Director Pat Tully told KRBD that the challenges will be discussed at the upcoming meeting on January 10th.
During that meeting, there's going to be a public hearing on requests to move two books from the teen room to the adult section.
One of those books is Red Hood by Elena Arnold, a loose retelling of Little Red Riding Hood. The other is Flamer by Mike Corrado, a graphic novel about a teenage Boy Scout grappling with bullying and homophobia. Deborah Simon is an advocate for book bans. She's also on the Library Advisory Board and voted in favor of removing the book Let's Talk About It, The Teen's Guide to Sex, Relationships, and Being a Human from the library's teen section last April. Her vote was the only one in favor of the challenge, but the library's decision was later overturned by the city council, which pulled the book in July. Simon is also responsible for the new challenges. She spoke during the citizen comment section of a recent Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly meeting on what she said was vulgar and unacceptable language in the book Flamer.
All right, that's enough. I'm tired of this rabbity bee. Take out that effing ponytail. F off. Hold still, GD. Get the F off of me. MF. You effing F. You're the F. You're the effing FC and QPF. This book.
Simon also challenged the book's inclusion in the Ketchikan High School's library last fall. The Library Review Committee said at the time the book supports ethical standards, emotional needs, and promotes the students' ability to think critically about what they read. Her challenge was denied. Simon said she plans to appeal the ruling. Assemblymember Kathy Bowling disagreed with Simon's analysis of Flamer.
I see this as an anti-parental choice movement that concerns me. And I encourage everyone to read the book Flamer, because I found it kind of spiritually lifting.
Catlin Jacobson has been a librarian since 1991 and is the current high school librarian. She said the recent nationwide trend towards book challenges has been the greatest difficulty posed to her profession. She urged the assembly to follow policy.
Most importantly, as a private citizen, I urge you to follow the Constitution, which supports the freedom to read, which supports freedom of information. It is not my job to tell anybody what to read.
The book challenges will be heard and voted on at the upcoming Library Advisory Board meeting on January 10th. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
Rates of anxiety, depression, and suicide among youth are up nationwide, according to an advisory on youth mental health released by the U.S. Surgeon General. That's certainly true for Alaska, too, and in Petersburg, the local medical center is training community members to help youth in crisis. KFSK's Hannah Floor has the story.
Sign or symptom that starts with an A.
More than 20 people fill a conference room at Petersburg's Fire Hall on a Saturday in December.
How would it be?
They're here for an eight-hour training in youth mental health first aid. They're listing off signs and symptoms of kids in crisis in alphabetical order.
G. Sign or symptom with a G.
That's Katie Holmland. She's co-founder of Kinderskog, an after-school outdoor program for kids. And she's one of the facilitators of the training. She says she knows conversations with youth in crisis are hard, but she says talking about it can save lives.
Hopefully, with this training, more adults will be willing to lean into those hard conversations, because it's not going to be easy either way. But hopefully, at the end of the day, we still have that one young person.
According to a recent report from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, one in five high school students say they seriously considered suicide in 2021. Alaska has the second highest rate of suicide deaths in the nation, and suicide is the second leading cause of death for young people in Alaska. It's hard to know what the numbers are in Petersburg because federal law protects the privacy of patients. That means that providers can't share information that could identify someone. So the state releases public health data by grouping rural areas or small towns together. Becky Turland is the community wellness specialist at Petersburg Medical Center, and she's another facilitator. She says we should take those national and statewide numbers seriously because
Petersburg is no different.
People in the training are learning how to recognize the signs and symptoms that a kid is facing a mental health challenge. Those challenges include anxiety, depression, eating disorders, substance use, and attention deficit disorder. They're learning how to respond to those signs and symptoms and how to connect kids to the resources that are available. But they won't be diagnosing anyone. That's left to the professionals. Turland says it's a little like the difference between emergency responders and doctors.
We arrive on the ambulance, we're not there to diagnose anything. We could say, ooh, that might look like it.
Holman says sometimes the best response is just to listen.
Listening non-judgmentally and giving reassurance, like those are daily skills.
Other times, Holman says, the young person needs to be connected with professional help. Getting concrete help for a problem is an example of something called a protective factor. All kids face difficulties to one degree or another. The protective factors can make those difficulties manageable.
Protective factors are like the really good things that we can be doing to support and balance out and create resilient and strong kids.
Angie says that a sense of belonging is one of those important protective factors. She hopes that these trainings can help build that for Petersburg's young people by creating a wider network of adults that talk about difficulties with kids. This training is the first of four that the medical center plans to hold. They're made possible by a $10,000 grant from the Petersburg Community Foundation. That paid for Turland and Holmland to get certified as facilitators. It also pays for some of their time leading the trainings. Elementary school teacher Jolie Norman is taking the training. She says she learned that kids as young as her first graders can show signs of anxiety.
It's pretty scary to know at that young they're already experiencing something like that, when they don't even understand the emotions that they have.
She says she'll be looking for signs of anxiety, like trouble focusing and irritability, with the kids in her class.
Making sure I'm prioritizing social-emotional learning in my classroom and really giving my students the tools to self-regulate themselves before there's any type of crisis, or know how to reach out to somebody for help.
The next two trainings are just for employees in the school district. The district will pay their staff to attend using money from professional development grants. But Homeland and Turland will run another one for the wider community. Homeland encourages anyone who comes into contact with kids to sign up.
The more adults within our community, the stronger that safety net is. So if I'm not able to reach out to a youth about a situation they're experiencing, maybe I can reach out to Becky and say, hey, could you check in on so-and-so? Or we'll have this like beautiful network of people that we can reach out to and make sure our kids are supported.
The community-wide training is scheduled for mid-April. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Floor.
Starting this week, brewery and distillery tap rooms can stay open an extra hour in the evenings, thanks to regulation changes the Alaska legislature passed in 2022. One Juneau brewery is embracing the change immediately. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry stopped by and has this story.
Amanda Ninehouse pours a Devil's Club IPA, fresh lines, from a tap in the large wood-paneled tap room. Beer drinkers and sandwich eaters are taking up a few tables. It seems like a typical evening at Devil's Club Brewing Company, except for one thing. It's 8:07 p.m. Until this week, brewery and distillery tap rooms weren't allowed to serve alcohol after 8 p.m., according to state law. Legislation passed in 2022 allows tap rooms to serve drinks until 9, starting January 1st.
I think that we will have people that are wanting to be here that extra hour. I mean, I appreciate that we're allowed to be open later.
Mitchell Cabrigas has been coming to Devil's Club since it opened in 2018.
The very beginning, since all the breweries started, like, doing openings, you know, way back when, and the distillery, and, yeah, this is a cool, different vibe.
He's here with Brittany Wisner. She's headed out of town for graduate school, and she realized she'd have time to get Devil's Club one more time before flying out tonight.
And we're like, oh, they're open till 9, so we could go.
Yeah.
Both now.
Before the changes, staff also couldn't let patrons play games or host live music events. They'd have to tell tables to put decks of cards away. Now people can bring cards and games to play, and Cabrigas and Wisner say they're excited to see people embracing the new rules already.
Playing a board game, I was like, board games are out.
Whoa, uh-oh.
So far, Devil's Club is the only business in Juneau that's making schedule changes to their everyday operations. Evan Wood is one of the founders, and he says he's been waiting for the law to take effect since it was passed in 2022.
We were ready to pull the trigger and stay open an extra hour and invite everybody in for some more time.
Devil's Club is serving until 9, Tuesdays through Saturdays. Wood says they're going to see how the extra hour plays out.
Tonight is pizza night, so I imagine on Wednesdays we might get some more people after 8 p.m. as well. And for the rest of the week, we're going to play it by ear. We're going to try as often as we can to stay open until 9 to see if people are out and interested.
And these types of businesses can host 4 events in a year, starting now. Wood says he has big visions for what Devil's Club's events will be.
There are only a few events a year. We're being very careful to pick things that we think would be the most fun and the most innovative, things that haven't happened in Juneau before.
Customers still can't taste more than 36 ounces of beer at breweries or more than 2 drinks at distilleries. And tap rooms can't have TVs or allow people to sit at the bar. These rules are part of a swath of limitations placed on breweries and distilleries by the state legislature. Bar owners and brewery owners debated over limitations for years, in a back and forth that's known as the Bar Wars. Joan Wilson with the Alaska Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office says it's a sign of compromise that these changes finally passed.
The bill would not move forward that last year unless the recovery community, the bar community, and the brewery community agreed on the changes. And often they had to agree on changes against their own interests for that bill to move forward. So that, to me, is an incredible accomplishment.
Barnaby Brewing plans to stay open until 9 p.m. for big events like First Fridays. Forbidden Peak, Amalga Distillery, and Alaska Brewing Company aren't making changes to their hours just yet. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
The economy added more jobs than expected to end 2023. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. The U.S. labor market continues to surprise. Employers added 216,000 jobs last month. That means for the year, the economy added 2.7 million jobs. Another important indicator in the Labor Department's monthly report is average hourly earnings. They rose slightly to an annual gain of 4.1%, easily outpacing inflation. These increases could prompt the Federal Reserve to wait before cutting interest rates. Then again, the services sector showed considerable slowing in December. The Institute for Supply Management's monthly tracker reported its lowest reading since May. There have been other signs recently that consumers are focusing on essentials. I'm Novosofo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the fifth day of January, the year 2024. The sun rose at 9:51 this morning. It will set again at 4:38. That will give us 6 hours and 47 minutes of daylight, a gain of 2 minutes and 6 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 45 degrees set in 1979. And the record low was minus 5, set in 2007. Currently, a relatively balmy 38 degrees under overcast skies. Southeast winds at 10 miles per hour at the airport right now, where they are also reporting a full 10 miles of visibility again. Look for a 30% chance of showers this afternoon, kind of tapering off. Mostly cloudy skies with a high near 39, south winds to 15, gusting to 20. Partly cloudy overnight tonight with a low of 28, south winds to 10, turning to the west in the evening. And for tomorrow, a chance of rain and snow between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m., followed by serious rain. That rain could be heavy at times tomorrow. High near 40, southwest winds to 10, turning to the southeast and coming up, could gust as high as 30. We have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide here on the east side will happen at 3:21 p.m. and be 2.2 feet, followed by a high tide at 9:21 p.m. of 5 feet. Not too much in between. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 3:52 p.m. and be 3 1/3 feet, followed by a high tide at 9:41 p.m. of 9 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through Saturday, south winds to 20, becoming south 15 tonight, 12-foot seas, coming down to 11 feet tonight. For tomorrow on our east side, southeast 15, becoming 25 in the afternoon, seas to 8 feet. And for Saturday night, they are now calling for southeast 40 and seas coming up to 15 feet, finally 17 feet on Sunday. On our west side, over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for Saturday, southeast 20 today, seas to 5 feet, southwest 15 tonight, and seas to 3 feet, and for tomorrow on our west side, east 15, increasing to 30 knots in the afternoon, 4-foot seas building to 6 feet in the afternoon, and Saturday night, southeast 30, seas to 8 feet in the Shelikof. Well, AMC is conducting its fishing vessel drill conductor course on Monday and Tuesday. It's coming up, so now's the time to sign up. Just pick one person on your boat to go to this class because you really need to have a fishing vessel drill conductor on your boat. And they'll be trained to do all of the safety drills, various variety of things, cold water survival, abandoned ship procedures, how to make and receive mayday calls, life raft and firefighting protocols. And it's all very interesting and hands-on. Takes place in 2 days, Monday and Tuesday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center right over there on Near Island. It's well worth doing and completely free for all Kodiak commercial fishermen. Register online at www.amc.org or call them on the phone 907-747-3287.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.